Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I am not too bad. I have for you today a success of the week and a weird dilemma of the week. I have some thoughts about the lies we tell ourselves about our stuff. And I have a shout out to a podcast with a great top tip.
It's time for the success of the week and the weird dilemma of the week.
So the success of the week is a bit where I talk about something that's actually gone well. I feel like I do a lot of talking on this podcast about what's hard and what's difficult and what's agonizing. And so once in a while, I like to give myself a little pat on the back and share my success of the week. So my success of the week is I have got rid in one go of 7 mugs. 7 mugs. I thought I had sorted out, well, I thought I'd got my mug situation under some amount of control. A while ago, I got to a point where the mugs had a place in a cupboard. I could close the cupboard door and that was my mugs. But what I hadn't really accounted for, firstly, was Christmas. People gave me mugs for Christmas. Secondly, when I got them so they all fit in the cupboard, all in like one layer, I didn't want them piling up. I hadn't accounted for the mugs that were kind of on the move around the house. The mug in the front room and the mug in the bedroom and all of that. So I ended up again with too many mugs. And this was a harder go through because I'd already been through them and got rid of kind of the obvious choices for getting rid of. So the ones I really wasn't attached to or interested in. This time, I'd done that, and so the ones I had left were ones that had made the cut last time and stayed, or they were ones that are new and new gifts, and so feel particularly special to me. But I just went, I was sick of never having enough space for my mugs. I use mugs a lot, and just like emptying the dishwasher or washing up and then trying to clear the draining board of mugs was a constant annoyance. And so I went in quite, not ruthless, but decisive. I was like, whatever happens, all the mugs are going to fit in this cupboard in one layer. I just need to do it. And I looked at them with fresh eyes, and there was one that was a gift years ago, but that I never loved. And so that went to the charity shop. There was one that was a gift that was nice, but really small. And so I just would always choose a different mug so that I could have more tea in one go. And so that one went to the charity shop, and so on and so on. I was just quite decisive. I tried to be objective. I tried to focus on which are the ones I actively use rather than what are the feelings I get when I look at this mug and remember the person who gave them to me. And yeah, 7 mugs gone. Mug cupboard feels reasonably under control. So that feels like a great success of the week. My weird dilemma of the week is where I share something that it feels like non-hoarders just wouldn't understand, whereas you listening, you get me. And so My weird dilemma of the week was actually related to mugs. Tea bags without a use-by date. As well as people getting me mugs for Christmas, various people got me some interesting kinds of tea. And I already buy myself tea, and I had an unmanageable tea situation. So I decided that what I needed to do, I was a bit ill and couldn't really, I wanted to do some de-hoarding, but I wasn't fit to be up and about and moving things around. So I've got like a big plastic box that all my different teas live in. So I decided what I would do was empty out the big plastic box and put things back in it so that the ones that go out of date first are at the top, and the ones with a long use by date are at the bottom. My thinking being that way I could use it up in order and eventually be in a position where I had a less unmanageable amount of tea. So I was sorting through these different like bags and boxes of different types of tea. Obviously Yorkshire tea is the best for your average cuppa, but then different types of Earl Grey and different types of peppermint and ginger and all kinds. And it was reasonably successful. I was able to have like the bottom layer of this plastic box with things that only expire in 2025 and the top layer things that expire in June of this year, for instance. And that was all going fine until I came to, you know, the individually wrapped tea bags. I had like a whole pile of individually wrapped tea bags quite often that I had nicked from hotel rooms. You know, when you leave a hotel room and you clear them out of coffee sachets and tea bags or that kind of thing. Or sometimes, I don't know, if you place an order with a health food store, they sometimes send a tea bag as a freebie or something of some interesting herbal tea. And so I was looking at the tea bags, and some of them had use by dates on and some didn't. Actually, I should be clear. I think we're talking best before dates, which are a different thing. Use by dates offer safety in the UK, at least. Best before means it won't taste as good after this date. But I have very strict rules with myself. I don't eat or indeed drink anything that's out of date, whether it's used by or best before. I just don't. That's a rule. And so I sorted the individual tea bags that had dates on. I put them in the appropriate place in the box. And then I was left with some that didn't have dates on. And I had a dilemma because I don't know if they're already out of date. I don't know if they've got 2 years left on them. I don't know. And so, of course, my hoarding brain was saying, well, you should keep them. You know, no harm in drinking out of date tea anyway, and they're probably not out of date, they're probably fine, and you pour boiling water on them, it's not like you're going to be ill or anything. So that was what my hoarding brain was telling me. And then my rational brain was telling me that I know for sure I won't drink them because I don't know what the date is meant to be on them. I know I won't drink them. But then my hoarding brain comes back with, yeah, but it's really wasteful to just throw them away. And so that was my weird dilemma. What do I do with individually wrapped tea bags that don't have a date on them? And this may sound wasteful to some, and I'm okay with it sounding wasteful to some, but I threw them in the bin on the grounds that I wouldn't drink them. I have no shortage of tea bags. And knowing that I didn't know if they were past their date, I knew I wouldn't drink them. So wasteful as it felt, it was important for me to get rid of them because keeping them would have just been keeping them. I wouldn't have been drinking them. So I feel like I did the right thing. And it's just something less to have to think about when I delve into that box I know that currently everything in there is in date, and that feels good to me. So there's something I mentioned last week that I wanted to bring up again, just to sound you out, really. Would you be up for some kind of accountability group Zoom call? Cameras off if you want. My camera would be off. But where we get together for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that. And we do some de-hoarding in each other's virtual company. I think it's got potential as a really good idea, but I don't know if you're up for it. If you would be up for that, let me know. And I will see what I can sort out. So today I am talking about the lies we tell ourselves about our stuff. And we do. I mean, I brainstormed them and I came up with 19 that I'm going to talk about. 19 different lies that we tell about our stuff, that we tell ourselves, that we tell other people. And the thing with these lies, first of all, I know them because I tell them. I tell them to myself all the time. And they lull us into a false sense of security. As long as we're believing our own lies, we can feel safe in the knowledge that hoarding is fine. Hoarding is good. Hoarding is positive. And we know that it isn't. And if you're listening to this, on some level, you know it isn't. And whether you're ready to tackle it or not doesn't matter. Because what matters for this episode is that you start to spot some of these lies in yourself. Recognizing when you're telling a lie doesn't automatically fix you. It's not like a magic spell where you go, oh yeah, that's that lie that hoarder mentioned. I will no longer hoard. I wish it was that simple. So it's not a magic fix, but when we do recognize that we're telling ourselves or we're telling other people these lies, that we're believing these lies, when we spot them, we can start quietly to challenge ourselves. Because when we are aware that something isn't true or that our belief about it isn't accurate, that makes us that little bit more accountable for our actions and our behaviours. And it may not have an immediate effect, although it might. Sometimes people, I've had this before, somebody's pointed out like a contradiction in my beliefs and it's kind of popped the bubble, and I've from then on never done that thing again. More often though, it kind of niggles and you might carry on doing the thing for a bit, but now you're aware that it might be a contradiction. It takes away some of its power, and it gives that power over to you to eventually, it might take a while or it might be immediate, start to make different choices. The thing that gave me the idea to talk about this, I saw somebody in a group justify what could be considered a hoarding type behaviour. And it made me a bit sad because it was kind of evident to everybody that she was deceiving herself with this belief. So somebody had pointed out that if you've got too much stuff, you don't need to buy organising stuff. If you've got too much stuff, you don't need to buy boxes and folders and shelves. What you need is to get rid of some of your stuff, which is true. And this person had replied and said, yeah, but sometimes buying containers motivates you, especially if you like how they look. It can motivate you to organize yourself. And I thought, yeah, I've told myself that as well. And it's not true. And it's a justification that we want to believe, but it's just not the case. And it might feel reassuring and safe to believe that, because then we're okay to buy more. We're okay to go and get some boxes. And if they're pretty, that will be a motivator. But it's not true. And while it might feel nice to believe it, we're kidding ourselves. And so that is the first lie or justification we tell ourselves. I need more storage stuff. And the truth is that you don't need more storage stuff until you have completely de-hoarded your home. Because, well, there's a couple of reasons. One is that you don't know by the time you've finished de-hoarding how much stuff you'll have that you will need to be organizing. You don't know what you'll want to keep, and so you don't know what storage you'll need. The other reason it isn't true is that when we buy storage stuff, when we live in a hoard, that stuff just becomes more hoard, more clutter, more stuff. I know this to be true because not only did I do it for a long time, I'm still very often tempted to do it. I always think, yeah, but that box is so pretty. I know the principle is that you shouldn't buy organizing boxes, but that one surely I should buy. The reality, no, you don't need more storage. You need less stuff. Lie number two, and this applies when you're perhaps thinking of acquiring something, and it also applies when you're trying to decide whether to keep something or not. And that lie is, it's only one thing, it won't make that much difference to the clutter. It's just one mug, it's just one pasta bowl, it's just one bottle of shampoo. It's just one new bag. And yes, it is. But my mug cupboard was made up of lots and lots and lots of just ones. And my whole house is made up of lots and lots and lots and lots of just ones. And as long as we kid ourselves by thinking that, oh, I can keep this notebook. What difference is this notebook going to make in the grand scheme of things? But we make that decision repeatedly, then nothing changes. Another related lie to that, or justification, is, oh, there's no point me bothering putting this can in the bin because I'm surrounded by empty cans or paper or books or clothes. What's the point in making any effort with any of it? Because this tiny effort here is insignificant in the face of the giant hoard I live in. And boy, can I relate to that. I think this often, and I have to override it. Because yes, putting this one empty bag of rice in the bin can feel futile when you have a house full. But if you don't put it in the bin, then first of all, it's something else you're going to have to get rid of later. And secondly, it adds to that feeling of futility when you try to do anything. Another lie we often tell ourselves is, I have to keep this because it was a gift. Or that might look like, I can't get rid of this because it was a gift. It might look like, I don't even really like this, but such and such gave it to me, and so I've got to keep it. And this is a hard one for a lot of us. It really is. But our feelings about a person are not represented in that thing in your hands. That whether we keep that thing in your hands or not is not a reflection on how we feel about the person who gave it to us? What is a reflection of how we feel about the person who gave it to us is how we behave, how we act, how we treat people. That's a far better way of reflecting your love for somebody or your respect for somebody or your fondness for somebody or your nostalgia about somebody. The object is not them. Even if they held it, even if they made it, we can't keep hold of every item that has been given to us just because somebody gave it to us. We can get rid of it and still love that person. We can get rid of it and still remember that person. We can get rid of it without guilt because our feelings for that person and their feelings for us do not depend on us keeping hold of stuff. We can still remember how loved we felt when somebody gave us something without holding on to it all. The fact is, if we were loved or if we are loved by somebody and they give us something, that love is still there. That love, whether it's present or whether it's in the past, doesn't change whether or not you hold on to the trinket. There's a high chance that person won't remember having given it to you. And there's an even higher chance that they wouldn't want that thing to contribute to you having a really difficult life. So just because somebody gave you something doesn't mean you have to hold on to it indefinitely. Getting rid of it, whether that's throwing it away, donating it, selling it, doesn't make any difference to the fact that they gave you a thing and you cherished it for a while. Or you cherished the fact that they gave you something. Another justification we use for keeping something is, oh, I paid money for this, or I paid a lot of money for this, so I should keep it. And the fact is, if it feels like a waste of money to get rid of something because we spent money on it, it was the spending of the money that was wasteful if we didn't use the thing. What we do with it now doesn't matter. We spent the money maybe 20 years ago, maybe 3 months ago. But the money is spent, the money is gone. And holding on to the thing for the rest of your life doesn't make any difference to the fact that the money is spent and gone. Maybe you used this thing for a while, but you don't anymore. Maybe you never used it. But the fact of it being worth money doesn't mean you should hold on to it. You can still give it away. You can still sell it. But the thing is, it being worth money is fairly meaningless if it's in a box in your garage or at the back of a shelf behind a pile of books. It doesn't matter that it's worth money. You can resell some things. I think there are some benefits of doing this, and I think a big one for us, for hoarders, is that it can show you whether your own beliefs about the value of a thing are realistic. You might think it's worth a lot of money, but if somebody won't pay more than $10 for it, that can be difficult, but also a bit of a wake-up call. And another benefit is that if it does sell, you get a bit of money. The danger with selling, first of all, it's not an efficient way to de-hoard. I would advocate only doing it for the occasional thing or doing it explicitly to make money, not as a way of de-hoarding. Because as a way of de-hoarding, it is slow, it is laborious, it's a lot of work. You get daft inquiries from people that you've got to respond to, and it's a bit of a pain. You've got to wrap things up and post them. So the reason I'm slightly wary of saying if it's worth a lot of money, you can sell it, is that we know all of that, that it's a bit of a pain. So we don't sell it. We just think we will. And we go through life thinking we'll sell it. and we never ever do. And that's why there can definitely be an argument for just cutting your losses and donating it. Give it away. Give somebody the joy of finding a designer jacket in a charity shop. Give a charity shop the joy of getting a designer jacket donated. If you really, really insist on selling it, give yourself a time limit. You can sell it as long as it's listed within 2 weeks. If it's not listed in 2 weeks, it goes to the charity shop, full stop. But saying, I have to keep this because it's worth money, is a lie we tell ourselves. It is. Another lie we tell ourselves is, I'm saving this from the landfill. And my goodness, we can feel such a responsibility for saving things from the landfill. Problem is, we're not saving it from the landfill, we're just delaying it landing in the landfill. If we throw it out today, it might go in the landfill. If we don't throw it out today, and somebody clears it out of our house when we die, it might still go in the landfill. You keeping it in your house is not saving it from the landfill. It's kicking the can down the road. And in the meantime, you're living in your own landfill. The waste already happened, a bit like the money's already spent. The waste has already happened. The thing exists now. You keeping it in your home isn't saving the earth. It just means it goes into the landfill at a different time. You deserve to not live in a landfill. Another lie we tell ourselves is, I can't get rid of this. I know it's broken, but I'm going to fix it. Or, I can't get rid of this. I know it's a bit of a mess, but I'm going to upcycle it. And maybe you do know your way around the inner workings of a kettle. Or maybe you are really good with a paintbrush. But if you're not actually fixing it or upcycling it or repairing it, then you're not. And so saying you've got to keep it because it can be fixed and you can fix it, or you've got to keep it because it could be really pretty and you could make it really pretty, but you're not fixing it and you're not making it pretty, that's a lie you're telling yourself. This is another time when a deadline is good. I can fix this, but I can only keep it if I fix it by Friday. Or this could be really attractive if I sanded it down and painted it blue. But if you haven't sanded it down and painted it blue by the end of the month, it has to go. Because saying to yourself endlessly, oh, but I'll fix it, but then not fixing it, it becomes a lie. Not a deliberate lie. None of this is malicious. None of this is you or me, indeed, being a bad person. It's about us. Our brains have spent years coming up with reasons why we have to hold on to things. It's part of the disorder. It's part of our protective mechanisms. It's part of the weird thinking we do around things. It's part of our sense of responsibility to the earth. It's part of so many mixed up, mangled up things. So when I call these things lies, I'm not pointing at you and saying you're a liar. I'm pointing out that these are misguided, misjudged ideas that we are invested in believing because then we can keep the stuff around us. Do you want to be a de-hoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to subscribe. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. The The next thing we say to ourselves to justify keeping something that isn't true is, if I get rid of this, part of myself will be lost. And this is how enmeshed we can get with our stuff. We can feel it so viscerally. But the reality is, it's stuff. And we are separate from it. We live with it. We live alongside it. We live in it. But getting rid of a thing, we don't lose anything of ourselves. Or if somebody gave it to us, we don't lose anything of them. Because that thing also isn't them. We might identify so much with our stuff that we can feel like getting rid of any of it is losing part of ourselves. But it's not. It's not. You are separate from the things that surround you. And clearing them out gives you space to become who you should be, or to become more of yourself without the need for all the things that you currently might think are integral to your life. The next lie we tell ourselves about our stuff is that it's not doing any harm. It's not doing any harm. Why would I get rid of it? Why would I go through all the hassle and stress of de-hoarding when it's not doing any harm? Keeping these extra mugs isn't doing any harm. But when you're tripping over things, that does you harm. When you're eating out-of-date food, that does you harm. When you can't find your keys, so you're late for work, that does harm. When you overshop, that does harm. When you're broke because you've overshopped, that does harm. When there's a few tons of extra plastic in the world because we can't stop shopping, that does harm. When we can't get the toilet fixed, that does harm. It's easy to pick up one book and think keeping this doesn't do me any harm. But it's not about the individual things you pick up. It's about the whole, the entirety. And when you put it all together, it does harm. Another justification we use to keep something is, oh, but this is one of a kind, or this is rare, so I need to keep it. But it's important to examine that, like all of these other thoughts. Examine why you think that's true. If it's rare, fine. Why does that mean we need to keep it? If it's one of a kind, fine. But why does that mean we need it in our home? One of the reasons charity shops are such danger zones for me to shop in is not just that everything's cheap, and not just that everything's recycled, and not just that it's benefiting a charity. It's also that scarcity thing. Whereas if I go into New Look or Topshop, I can't fit in Topshop clothes. If I go into New Look or Tesco and I don't buy something and then afterwards I regret not buying it, I can go back the next week and get it. If I come out of a charity shop and I've left something and I regret it and I go back, it might have gone. And that might have been my last chance to get hold of that particular thing. And that is a real pull. But just because something's rare doesn't mean we have to individually, personally own it. Doesn't mean I have to have it in my house. Say one of the mugs in my cupboard was one of 20 ever made by a particular designer, and it's in demand, and so few people own one. Why does that make it more appealing to keep hold of it? It's a big question, and I expect a research paper has been written on this. But I've definitely kept things for this reason in the past. But it's quite disconcerting when you start examining what our reasoning is, what our thinking is around it's rare, therefore I must possess it. Why? It doesn't stand up to a lot of scrutiny. And yet we can believe it so firmly. Another lie, and this is such a big one for so many hoarders, is I might need it one day. I've got to keep this because I might need it. And yeah, you might. Equally, you might not. Equally, you might need something like it, but you've got something that'll do. But the highest chance is that if you do need it, you won't know where on earth it is because it's one of 20,000 things in a pile. And even if by some stroke of luck you do find it, it might have broken, might not work anymore. Keeping everything on the off chance that one day you'll need it means we are overwhelmed with stuff that we might not need. And it might be stuff that we can really easily use something else for, or stuff that we can really easily just get another one of. And I know there's like some people say like a rule of if you can get a replacement within 20 minutes and for less than $20, then get rid of it. I don't think it's that simple. First of all, $20 for some people is nothing and for other people is everything. So I don't think it can be as straightforward as if it costs less than $20, throw it away. Because we don't all have $20 to throw around. Equally, what is available within, say, a 20-minute drive of my house might be entirely different to a 20-minute drive from your house. Or you might not have a car. Can you walk somewhere in 20 minutes? If you can you carry the thing home? I think that kind of saying is overly simplistic. However, I think the idea behind it, which is essentially how replaceable is it? If I did need it, would I be totally stuck or would it be relatively easy to fix the situation? I think that's a valuable question to ponder. The next lie we tell ourselves is specific to clothes. And it's, I've got to keep this because one day it might fit me again. Or one day it will fit me again. And so many of us have so many clothes in so many sizes, because one day it will fit again. But the reality is that living in a bedroom with mounds and mounds and mounds and mounds of clothes is really hard and really disruptive and quite unhealthy and quite dangerous. And given how much evidence there is that diets don't work in the long term, keeping your size 8 stuff when you're a size 16 just doesn't work in real life. And if you do get back down to that size, do you still want to be wearing the stuff you were wearing 15 years ago? Chances are, I don't so much care about fashions moving on, though you might. But your own sense of style might well have moved on. Your own sense of what's comfortable or what colours you like can be completely different. And also, it's living in an uncomfortable and unhealthy way for the sake of something that may not happen. And that can make you feel bad. If you're trying to lose weight, and you can't, or if you do lose weight and then you regain it, then keeping those clothes that don't fit you can be like a constant reminder of a sense of failure. And the truth is, it's not your failure. Diets just repeatedly are shown to not work in the long term. They don't. After 2-3 years, pretty much everybody's gained the weight back. Most people have gained more than they lost. it's not a failing on your part if you can't lose weight or if you can't keep weight off. But having those clothes is like looking at you and mocking you for what feels like your failure, because we're made to feel like it's our individual personal failure. So don't keep the stuff that doesn't fit. And using "it might fit me again one day" as a justification for keeping it is another of those misguided ideas. Another lie is, "I should keep this because it will come back into fashion." And at that point, we start talking about how fashions come in cycles and how all the kids are wearing 90s stuff now. And that, you know, and sure, certainly round here, all the kids are wearing 90s stuff now. But that's not a reason for me to keep my 90s stuff from the 90s for 30 years just because there's a possibility, maybe even a probability, that that stuff will be trendy again. If there is that kind of 30-year cycle for fashions, that's a really, really long time to keep something just because trends tend to have cycles. And also, when these things cycle back, there's always a twist. When 80s stuff was back in, it wasn't like pure 80s like I might remember it. It was like 80s plus now. And similarly with the 90s stuff now. It's not pure 90s like I lived in the 90s. It's 90s with a new twist on it. Because of course it is, because that's how fashions work. People take ideas and build on them or expand on them or make them unique to themselves. But ultimately, your home is not a museum. Your home is not a warehouse where fashion can be stored, because by 2054, what's new now might be in fashion again. Another lie we tell ourselves, and we mean it, we mean all of them, is, "I will de-hoard, I will, just next week, or tomorrow, or next month, or next year." There's always a reason to put it off. There's always a reason to start tomorrow, not today. And sure, we're busy today, but we're going to be busy tomorrow, and we're going to be busy next week, and next month, and next year. And by telling ourselves that we'll start at some point in the future, we can trick ourselves into feeling quite smug and like, "I've got this. The house is going to be fine because I'm going to start de-hoarding tomorrow." And we can relax and go, "Yeah, got this under control. All is well. All is sorted." And it isn't. We're fooling ourselves. And whatever we can do needs to start now. It needs to start when you next make a cup of tea. You put the tea bag straight in the bin. You're not starting tomorrow with the whole pile of used tea bags that you might have on a plate somewhere. If some rubbish needs to go out, you can spend 40 seconds taking it out now. De-hoarding is essentially a series of about 40 million individual tasks that all add up into hopefully a good result. And by telling ourselves we're starting in the future, we give ourselves a pass for right now. You know, tomorrow, it will be tomorrow's right now. And the further we delay, the longer we live in a situation that is not dignified and that is not somewhere we enjoy living. Another lie we tell ourselves is, "I have to keep this because I got it when ... I got it when I was on holiday when I was 12. I got it when I left home. I got it when I was on that date. I got it when." And the truth is that getting rid of the thing doesn't mean you didn't leave home. Doesn't mean you didn't go on holiday when you were 12. Doesn't mean you didn't go on that epic date. Just means you're lumbered with more stuff for the rest of your life. And the more we're overrun by things that we have to keep because we got it when we got our first job, the less we can appreciate that that thing reminds us of the pride of getting our first pay packet, because it's just one thing of 10,000. We can't appreciate the pride of having bought that thing with our first paycheck if it's one thing in a giant pile. If we really curate, and I mean really, get rid of a lot of stuff, then we can actually value the things that we really value. But if we give every item that kind of significance, then we're overwhelmed and we can't appreciate any of it. Another thing we tell ourselves that is counterproductive and untrue, and this was a big one for me and I still have to battle it all the time, is there's no point de-hoarding because it's an impossible task. There's too much to do. I don't know how. I'll only slip back anyway. All of this thinking meant that for years and years I didn't even try. And even now that I do try, it creeps in. I make amazing progress and then I turn around and see what else has to be done. And I go, what's the point of my progress with 7 mugs when? And that's disheartening. But not trying means we definitely won't make progress. Trying means we've got a chance. Taking some action is better than taking no action. It's not impossible. It's hard. It's hard. But it's not impossible. And if we don't do anything because we so firmly believe it's impossible, then it kind of will be impossible, because it's impossible if you don't take action. We have to suspend our disbelief in the possibility of it being true to at least try. Another lie we say to ourselves to avoid having to de-hoard is, well, it doesn't really affect me that much anyway. But it does. Even if we really want to tell ourselves it doesn't, do you hesitate before inviting someone over? Have you not invited someone over for years? Do you panic when there's a knock at the door? Do you avoid taking photos at home because you know what the background's going to look like? Do you think that if there was an emergency, paramedics would be able to get you out of your home safely? Does it just drag you down when you look around? Do you feel hopeless and helpless? All of that is your stuff affecting you. All of it is. It does affect us. And we can tell ourselves it doesn't and we're fine. But you can't live in a hoarded home and be unaffected by it, however much you tell yourself otherwise. And the final lie we tell ourselves is, clutter doesn't affect my kids that much. My kids live here, but it's fine. They're fine. They're healthy. They're happy. They're well adjusted. And I know you want this to be true. I do. Because the thought that you might be providing an environment for your kids that is harming them must be unbearable. But it is known, and children of hoarders will tell you, that growing up in a hoard affects them. And it affects them really negatively. It's a trauma. It's an ongoing long-term trauma for children to grow up in that environment, and for children to grow up with parents who hoard, for children to grow up with parents who value their stuff more than they value their kids having a clear space to play in. Dr. Jan Eppingstall and I did a whole episode about this that I will link to in the show notes at overcomecompulsivehoarding.com www.lifeisgood.co.uk. But just know that living this way is not healthy for you. It's not healthy for your kids. It's not healthy for your pets. It's not healthy for elderly parents you care for. It's not. I'm sorry to say it, but it's true. We all deserve better than this. And that's why we need to combat these lies that we're telling ourselves so that we can start to step out of our comfort zone and try and do things differently and try and live differently. I want to make sure I'm talking about the things you want to hear about. Are there things you wish the podcast covered or things you want to hear more of that I've already covered? You can let me know at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/topic. So shout out this week to the lovely Meg Kissack, who you may remember from episode 131. This is a few seconds from her podcast, The Daily Pep. Have a listen.
Maybe you do know enough. And maybe the things you don't know are the things that you need to find through the doing. Because we know not everything goes to plan. We know that so much of life is an experiment, and sometimes it is only through actually doing the thing or taking action that we really do know what we're doing, and we've got fucking good ideas.
I think that's good advice. It's scary, but it's good advice. Okay, thank you for listening. And I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. There may be links in this podcast that earn me money. This doesn't come at any extra cost to you if you ever make a purchase through the links, and it helps to support the future of the podcast.